When morning comes to Morgantown, the merchants roll their awnings down, the milk trucks make their morning rounds.
And health talk on this hot, steamy afternoon. I think today's the hottest day. It's made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Tahiti Nui, Heaven on Earth, and Greenery Cafe.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday Morning Market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
The Greenery Cafe in the heart of Lihue, one block off of Rye Street on Akahi Street, serving flavorful and organic soul food, wraps, smoothies, herbal iced teas, desserts, and vegetarian meals. Located in the lush garden setting near Tip Top Cafe, call-in, takeout, and catering available. Open Monday through Friday for breakfast and lunch. The Greenery Cafe, hearty, healthy soul. 246-4567 or online at thegreenerycafe.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And I also say the views and opinions are those of the speaker and do not represent those of KKCR, its board, its underwriters, its members, or its programmers. Good afternoon, Dr. Donna Kaplan. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, Cousin Rich. How are you?
Good.
Thank you.
Are you melting?
I as I said, I have my little rose spritzer in the car because I don't have air conditioning.
It's been pretty hot.
It's been hot.
It's been something that we've dodged five storms,
really,
huh?
And that's pretty amazing.
And we're dodging Ximena right now, and that's why it's bringing all this, the weather, the rain on the North Shore, the humidity, the big surf on the east side. It's pretty exciting. I feel sorry for the tourists who come and can't participate of the oceans and
I know, so, they want to swim.
But that's all part of it. We get to see
swim?
The waterfalls. Well, what's our topic today, Doctor?
Today, I am going to talk about breast health. It's a very important topic, and we're going to talk about the importance of preventative breast health. We're also going to talk about the issue about mammograms. There's been a lot of research coming out in prestigious conventional medical magazines that are really showing that mammograms are not preventing deaths and are actually causing more cancers. So we're going to talk about that a little later. But so it's very, you know, the breasts are very important to take care of. In terms of statistics, a third of the cancer diagnoses are breast cancer, and 15% of cancer deaths in women are from breast cancer. So the most common cancer for women is breast cancer. So so it's very important. A lot of women have fear around their breasts. And fear if they have a diagnosis. And we're going to talk more about the issue of diagnosis because, as it turns out, there's a very high number of women being diagnosed with breast cancer, but it's a form that is non-invasive. It's actually, if left alone, in, I believe, almost 80% of the cases would not turn into invasive cancer. And yet women are getting very strong treatments. And when I mean strong treatments, I mean either lumpectomy or mastectomy with radiation and often chemo and other drugs to follow up with that are endocrine drugs. So let's talk general about breast health and staying healthy. So, as is for the rest of the body, a healthy lifestyle, including a healthy diet and good exercise, low alcohol intake, minimizing chemical toxins as much as possible, decreasing stress as much as possible, and the way that we are able to deal with stress, meaning applying our stress release tools, getting good sunlight, enhancing the immune system. So my approach with any kind of person who comes into my office as a holistic naturopathic doctor and Chinese medicine practitioner, my approach is the holistic approach. It's an individualized approach. And so even though today we're talking about the breasts, yes, there can be something and some treatments that can directly affect the breasts, but always indirectly, we want to be as healthy as possible. And so I'm going to look at all the details that relate to that person's health, including their lifestyle, including some of those things that I just mentioned, and assessing, you know, how we can best be as healthy as possible. So diet, as we talk a lot about on this show, is extremely important. So this is just in general. So if I'm working with an individual who comes into my office, I'm going to be assessing all of their body systems and how they're working, because everything affects everything else. And I'm also going to assess their nutritional status and whether they have enough nutrients in terms of vitamins and minerals and beneficial fats and proteins and others as well. And if they're not, well, why are they not getting the nutrients that they need? Is it just that they're not eating enough or the right foods? Or do they have an issue with digestion and absorption? So what I find is that so many people, in fact, the majority of the patients I see over the last years, are coming in and actually have malabsorption. So they're not able to absorb well. And this they may or may not understand that that's going on. They may have obvious digestive symptoms, or they may not. So that's my approach. So a lot of times there are certain foods that person is eating, and we've talked a lot about this before, that the body says, no, you know, I'm sensitive to that food. In fact, that food is a toxin for me, and we need to avoid the certain foods. So anyone who has inflammation in their intestines or a leaky gut syndrome, and we've also talked a lot about that on this radio show, is going to inevitably have foods that they have grown to be intolerant for them that are actually toxic. And we can talk more about that, but so again, they're accumulating more toxins, even though it might be a really great food that could be considered very healthy to another person. And so then the liver has to deal with that as a toxin. So in my individualized approach, I'm going to want to look at that if that person has inflammation in their intestines, which is extremely common for various reasons. So anyways, in terms of what we're going to talk about on the radio show and our topic of breast health, so we want to be as healthy as we can be so our bodies have the resources to fight whatever it needs to fight and to come into beautiful balance and stay healthy. So we want to avoid foods that cause inflammation. So, Cousin Rich, I know some of those foods that cause inflammation, like right? I know you know. Refined oil.
Oh, and refined sugars.
Refined
carbohydrates.
See? So good.
Mm-hmm. And the bad oils.
Right? The bad oils that have been, yeah, they've been heated. They've been extracted using chemicals. Any food that has chemicals in it. So that would be, you know, packaged, processed food.
And high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated mm-hmm. oils and
exactly.
all that stuff. So, right.
Yeah. So.
And all that causes inflammation, right?
It does. It does. And inflammation causes disease processes in our body. And it's a precursor to cancers.
That's funny. I'm reading Dr. Weil's book. Dr. Kurt, one of his recent books on aging, and he talks a lot about inflammation and explains it quite well in his book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
out there in the world. Everybody knows about it. So
yeah, I think so. But they may not put it together of what's causing inflammation. So also it's really important to stay away from foods that are commercial because of the amount of pesticides and herbicides that are used and the GMO products. And the GMO products, of course, have high amounts of pesticides and herbicides. And any of you listeners who've been tuning into this show, Health Talk, which comes out every first and third Monday from 12 to 1, I've had Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who's a part-time resident here, who's a senior researcher at MIT, and she's talked a lot about this, the health effects of glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup. So a lot of these foods that are so common, like corn and soy, which even if we're not eating corn and we're having a processed food, we're likely eating derivatives of that corn, like the high fructose corn syrup, the corn oils, the soy oils. But that's going to, the GMO foods, besides their own health effects, are also going to be laden with so much glyphosate and often other pesticides and herbicides. So this is a big issue.
And Dr. Seneff mentioned once, I remember, that they spray the wheat right before it's harvested
mm-hmm.
with Roundup.
That's right. They supposedly do that to make the wheat do its last-ditch effort to put all of its energy into its seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyone who's eating wheat is that's not organic. So this is a big issue. So it's been, in this past spring, the WHO, as probably many of you heard, if you've been listening to this show, made a big statement that glyphosate, in fact, is a probable carcinogen. And so I believe that's class B, but do you remember?
I don't.
Yeah, but anyways, a probable carcinogen. And so that's made a lot of changes in a lot of countries in terms of, you know, how they're handling it or banning it or banning sales. And so there's been a lot of research that actually that, in fact, is true, that glyphosate, so the main ingredient in Roundup, does cause cancer. And there are different ways that it does. And so we were just talking about inflammation and inflammation in the intestines. So one of the ways is by, it is a bactericide, so it's going to kill bacteria. So the very important beneficial bacteria in our gut, which helps our whole health in terms of neurotransmitters, all of our brain health, our emotional, psychological health, weight loss or not. I mean, so many functions are due to the, you know, trillions and trillions of beneficial bacterial cells in the intestines that we want to have. And so if a person's been having a diet or a part diet that contains glyphosate, then these bacteria are going to be killed off. And so this is going to cause inflammation in the intestinal lining, which will also cause, it will also lower the immunity. 80% of our immune system is in the gut. And it will also cause inflammation just because of the nature of it. And if it's Roundup Ready GMO, then it has this bacterial side that actually kills and bursts the stomach of the bugs, so of the caterpillars. And so this accumulates and causes inflammation in the intestines. And so that person, if they have been eating foods that aren't just strictly organic, and most people are not, then it's going to cause inflammation in this way. Glyphosate also will cause a disruption in the SIPE enzymes, which are the important enzymes in the liver, which are responsible for detoxification. So detoxification is so important in the body, especially in this day and age when we have so many chemicals. And many of the chemicals which specifically affect the breast tissues, because they are mimicking estrogen. So glyphosate is also an estrogen mimicker. So these are called xenoestrogens. So there are many chemicals, including many of the herbicides and pesticides, many of the plastics and what's contained in plastics, like the phthalates and the BPAs, and even if it's non-BPA plastic, it's still going to have very detrimental toxins. And further, there are toxins like these xenoestrogens that act as estrogen in the body. So the toxins are directly going to bind to the estrogen binding sites, which are abundant in the breast tissue. So that's another way that glyphosate is contributing to a major risk factor for breast cancer, as well as I just mentioned, the plastics. So we need to stay away from plastics. It's very difficult. It's so abundant. We need to especially not use plastics for microwaving. So we want to store things in glass containers or a good stainless steel container. But glass container would probably be best. Stainless steel, especially if it's made in a place like China, which most of it is, we don't know what kind of metals are in there.
What about freezing plastic? I hear that even putting water in plastic containers and freezing it for a hot day is not good, that the the toxins get released.
Oh yeah, sure. If something's hot and you're pouring it into something like that's plastic, is not a good idea. Exactly. Even meats that are stored in plastic, unfortunately, even if they're are great local grass-fed meat. So also, anything that is commercial meat is going to have high amounts of glyphosate and GMO in it, even if it's, quote, natural. Okay, natural means it hasn't been injected with antibiotics, but the feed is going to be primarily GMO feed. It's going to have pesticides and herbicides, and it's going to also be having estrogen. If it's commercial dairy, then you're talking about the bovine growth hormone. So all these things really need to be avoid it, especially when we're talking about preventative breast health. Now, antiperspirants are very bad for the body. They have chemicals. But you see, when we're putting the antiperspirant in the axillary, in the armpit, it's right there next to the breasts and next to the lymph glands. So this is something that, you know, we've been talking about over the years, but it's very important. Also, antiperspirants have aluminum in it, and the aluminum is also very detrimental for the whole body and the brain, but specifically we're talking about localized for the breasts.
What's the difference between deodorant and antiperspirant?
Well, the antiperspirant has chemicals that make you stop sweating. And the antiperspirant is more of a cover-up. And there are deodorants now out there that you can find in health food stores, for example, that have mostly organic ingredients. So that would really be important when we're considering breast health and what we're putting right there. And I also want to say, you know, this goes for men as well. Not just the antiperspirant, but what we're talking about in terms of breasts, because there is an incidence, and I don't have the number on me right now, of men getting breast cancer as well. Hmm. And a lot of this is due to likely, you know, the herbicides and the plastics and the estrogens in our food. So diet is very, very, very important. A beneficial diet will include good leafy green veggies, and even the cruciferous veggies have the sulfur compounds that are specifically anti-cancer and benefit the liver. So we always want to benefit the liver, because we need the liver to do all of its processes in the body. It has so many, but it is the main detoxification organ in the body. So this is very, very, very important. Beneficial foods would include nuts and seeds. Beneficial foods would include grass-fed beef, organic poultry.
We have a caller, Donna.
Okay, let's.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Aloha. Hello.
Oh, hold on. I got it all going on here. Hello. You're on the air.
So a beneficial diet also is going to be low in sugars and processed carbohydrates and processed oils, like we said, and have, if you can have good oils like from avocados and from coconut oil, wild caught fish, you know, those are very beneficial. And we're going to talk more about beneficial foods later. So I want to talk about attitudes towards breasts. So a lot of, you know, we have cultural attitudes. We have individual women with their own attitudes to their own bodies, including their breasts, which can actually be very, very negative. And so we always want to have positive thoughts. I look at, And this is not just to the breasts, but of course the whole body and the whole outlook in life. We want to use tools to eliminate stress and really implement positive thoughts, positive affirmations that decrease negative emotions.
Okay, let's try this, Donna.
Okay.
Hello, you're on the air.
Aloha.
I don't know what's going on, so let me check this out and continue. So
okay, so I'll continue.
Hold on, listeners. Thank you.
So I see personally the breasts. I like to see the breast as a representation of the divine mother, of the divine spiritual mother. So that could be, you know, there's a divine mother in most religions, but of course, Mother Mary, Tara in Tibetan Buddhism, Kuan Yin in Chinese Buddhism. And the divine mother is there for all of her children, no matter what the cost. It's this fierce compassion, deep, deep compassion and love. And this fierce compassion, so no matter what, she is there for her child. And we see this in mothers, human mothers, other animal mothers. We see this fierce compassion, no matter what. They're going to look out for their child, for their babies, for their children, no matter what it takes. And so, and also the breasts are right there on the chest where the heart is, love. So I just wanted to say that. But of course, when we're talking about a holistic protocol and how to stay healthy, not only do we want to have a positive view about our own breasts or others' breasts, but we want to have, you know, positive view about ourselves and about life in general. So we can learn and implement stress release techniques and how to release negative emotions. So meditation is great for that. Yoga, there are many tools. EFT. And we can talk about that at another time.
Donna, I'm reading here that breast cancer in men is a rare disease. Less than 1% of all breast cancers occur in men. In 2014, 2,360 men were diagnosed with the disease.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably a lot higher than 20 years ago. And it's interesting, but there has been an increase in double mastectomies in men.
Okay, let's try this, Donna. Hello, are you on the air? No, we're having some difficulty with
okay.
the phone, so excuse me, listeners, I apologize.
So we're going to continue to work on that and continue talking. So before we start talking about mammograms, I want to talk about breastfeeding. Because breastfeeding, actually, the longer a woman breastfeeds, it reduces her risk significantly of breast cancer.
And why is that?
Well,
Hello?
I'm not exactly, there are, you know, speculations on why that must be, but first of all, I want to talk about a study in 2003. Okay, that was done with, I want to look at my notes here. This study was done with many, many, many women that, not finding where I have that, but I can still talk about it. So many, many women in different countries, in developing countries versus developed countries. And what they found is that, oh, I remember the notes. I have it on. I'm so glad. Okay.
Okay, we have caller. We want to take the calls
right
now.
And then we're going to talk about breastfeeding after that.
Hello?
Hello, you're
Aloha.
On the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Aloha.
Aloha, Cousin Rich and Dr. Donna.
Yes.
Aloha.
Great to reach you guys. And thank you for you and your colleagues, Dr. Stephanie's programs. I had a question and a comment, please.
Okay.
I've been studying, you know, the people who live the longest, and amongst the cultures that live the longest are the Okinawan folk. Now, basically it's suggesting that the people in Okinawa, because they eat a huge amount of flavonoids, which is perhaps 60 times the quantity of flavonoids that even the folks who move from Japan or Okinawa to the West, anyway, because they eat these huge amounts of anti-estrogenic foods, i.e., for example, miso, fermented miso, right, the rate of prostate and breast cancer is like almost nominal, it's almost minimal compared to the West. So I follow that lead. Then number two, my question is, Dr. Donner, do you think that in the light of the heinosity of the lovely GMO substances, do you think that taking NAC pursuing a prebiotic and probiotic prone lifestyle will help to mitigate some of these lovely glycosate compounds?
I believe you're talking about N-acetylcysteine. Is that what you're talking about? NAC, NAC
right.
is N-acetylcysteine.
Right.
And that can be very, very helpful in detoxifying the liver. And it also has the N-acetylcysteine is actually a very good sulfur compound. But it does help with the CYP enzymes in detoxification. So I would say yes, it would help. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think I'm sort of like in a quandary. The thing that really has changed my life tremendously, besides listening to you, of course, and your colleague, is I've been watching these vegetarian videos by the Vegetarian Society, and basically they're suggesting that one, if it's made by man, one should not consume it. So that's I try to follow that advice. So the whole thing is, I just don't know what conditions are these quote unquote organic products are grown in. I don't know if I can believe them or not. So I just think that following these tacks of eating the anti-estrogenic foods and then taking the prebiotic and probiotic lifestyle seriously will hopefully help me, you know, deal with these poisonous substances in our environment.
Yes, I recommend, you know, all the person can do to keep their liver healthy and their immune system healthy. But thanks so much for calling, and always appreciate hearing you.
And we have some other
callers.
Thank
you so much, Dr.
Thanks a lot. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi.
Aloha.
Do you know any bio, they call them holistic dentists on the island?
I don't. I heard that there is one on Maui, but I haven't heard of one here. But that doesn't mean that they don't exist.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
So that brings to mind, which I wasn't talking about, but your health in your mouth is very, very important for the whole body. We don't want to have any, bacteria in the gums or from instead of extracting the tooth, I'm just not thinking of the name. A root canal.
Oh, a root canal.
Root canals can be very detrimental to the body because it's often that not all of the bacteria is able to come out, and so there's a little bit that's sealed in there, which can cause issues and even chronic fatigue in the body. But it can really be an issue for the immune system, along with all the other issues that the body's trying to deal with. So we were talking about breastfeeding, and that breastfeeding, the longer one breastfeeds, the more the less of a risk of breast cancer that woman has. So there was this study and on breast cancer and breastfeeding. It was a collaborative reanalysis of individual data from 47 epidemiological studies in 30 countries. So as I mentioned, developed and underdeveloped countries. 50,302 women with breast cancer and 96,973 women without the disease. So this was in the Lancet, July 20, 2002. The Lancet is a very prestigious medical journal. And so what they found is that especially if a woman breastfeeds for at least a year, okay, so if a woman breastfeeds for a year, it's going to decrease their risk of having breast cancer later on. It's also, if a woman has had a child before age 30, it actually adds a decrease of 7% for each birth that woman has as protection against breast cancer. And the relative risk of breast cancer decreased by 4.3% for every 12 months of breastfeeding. So just another way of looking at the importance of breastfeeding. There's so many importance of breastfeeding for not only the baby, but for the mother too. And the longer that we breastfeed. So what they attributed, because they had much better results in underdeveloped countries, and they attributed that because in the Western countries, there was, of course, a shorter duration of breastfeeding of the babies. So very important. I was
going to ask Dr. Donna, is breast cancer on the rise? Is it leveled off? What's the statistics now?
Breast cancer, that's a really good question for Dr. Stephanie Seneff. And by reading her literature, breast cancer is actually been on the rise for sure since 2006. And it's been on the rise, and there was a leveling. You know, I don't have. There was a leveling out, and I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, Stephanie really believes that from 2006 on is the increased use of glyphosate. But yes, so in terms of is it on the rise? About 250,000 women are newly diagnosed in the U.S. alone every year with some form of breast cancer. And about 40,000 women die from it. So it's a very serious problem. So, you know, we're going to start talking about mammograms. So the last 25 years, we have heard that early detection from mammography is the way to go, is what we call preventative. And yet there have been studies done, especially in the last years and even in the last 2 years, that have come out in these prestigious conventional medical journals that are actually showing that mammography may not be the way to go. It may not really have the benefits that that they were hoping for. But because of, you know, there's been, as most people know, a vigorous call to just, you know, have every woman have mammograms for, quote, early detection, starting. Well, it used to be starting at age 40, and now very clearly it went to starting at age 50. And I believe the recommendation in this country is still every year. In Great Britain, they went to every 2 years. But even so, many, many women, even so that there's been this recommendation, many, many women are still getting yearly mammograms starting at age 40. So there's a very high failure rate in detecting cancer, especially in dense breast tissue, and also a moderately high failure rate in non-dense fatty breasts. And so, you know, this is a screening. So any positive result is going to lead to diagnosis. So in order to diagnose, what has been conventional is doing a needle biopsy to the place that they think is a tumor. And this has led to, you know, one of the major problems with mammography. It's led to overdiagnosis. And what the overdiagnosis is cascading women into unnecessary procedures, surgical, drugs, and overtreatment. So not just surgical, but we have radiation, chemotherapy, and all that. But the most common, okay, about a third of all the diagnoses for women's breast cancers, a third of them, the most common cancer detected from mammography is called ductal carcinoma in situ, or in situ, or DCIS. So what they're finding in these studies is that 50% of the cases or more are not really cancer at all. That the DCIS, it really normally doesn't have any symptoms at all. So ductal carcinoma in situ. So ductal, we have ducts in a woman's breasts. So this is really what they're calling a carcinoma that's in the ducts. So rarely is this an invasive breast cancer. Very rarely. In fact, this diagnosis of DCIS is only known since mammography. They've only found it because of mammography. Otherwise, it would not be known clinically. And it's created incredible amount of overdiagnosis and overtreatment for women. So in January 2005, they estimated that there was a half a million women living with DCIS diagnosis in the U.S. alone. But every year, 60,000 new women are diagnosed with DCIS. And what's really not understood is that if it's left alone, untreated, what would really happen? However, the standard of care has been to aggressively treat it as if it was invasive advanced breast cancer. So many, many women over the years have had mastectomy or even double mastectomy. So I want to just talk about a little more about this DCIS because it's very, very important. And it's important that women who are considering getting another mammogram or their first mammogram really consider the latest information that's coming out. And before I talk about DCIS, though, I just want to say that about the studies that have come out recently, and what they found with mammograms is that there's no impact on mortality of breast cancer whether a woman has had detection with mammography or whether they haven't. So in terms of whether a person is going to die from the disease, it makes no difference at all whether they're going to have mammography. So that's one point. So there have been these studies that really show that mammograms do not save lives and actually cause more harm than it helps women. And like we said, it's due to false positives, over-treatment when not necessary. And then the other issue is that radiation to the breasts year after year may be inducing cancers. And one of the studies, they really found that it has. And I'll bring that up a little later. So if you have, I mean, when a woman goes to have a mammogram, they're actually compressing the breast in a vise. And it's very, very painful for many, many women. It's really squeezed and compressed. And so this causes, you know, one of our enemies, which is inflammation. It also, if there is an issue in the breast, if there was a cancer, it could cause small parts of it to burst, and then through bleeding and inflammation travel, which would be called metastasis. And it's very, 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 very painful. So not only is you have this vise that's squishing the breast so that it's completely flat, and they often recommend a woman to take an Advil beforehand because of the pain. And furthermore, the technicians often have like a smelling salt on hand in case a woman faints. So, yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Ooh. So, because a lot of women faint because of the pain. But then they've got this vise, and it's causing compression. It's not good for tissue. It's causing inflammation, and then they're zapping it with very specific radiation to that inflamed, compressed tissue. And so it's no wonder that some of these studies are coming out that have found that it's actually, the cancers that the mammography is detecting may likely have been caused by the radiation. Radiation is a known, very, very known for a long time carcinogen. So there was research published in 2010. The reduction in mortality as a result of mammogram screening was so small to be non-existent. A mere 2.4 deaths per 100,000 persons were spared. This research, they analyzed cancer registry data from 16 million women in 547 counties across the United States, and they found no evident correlation between the extent of screening and breast cancer mortality at 10 years. So this is a very important study. It's one of the largest and longest that have been investigations into mammography. So the death rates from breast cancer were identical among women who got annual mammography and those who did not. There was another study in 2011, which was a very important study published in The Lancet, which demonstrates, for the first time, it demonstrated that women who received the most breast screening had a higher cumulative incidence of invasive breast cancer over the following 6 years than the control group, who received far less mammography screenings. And there are now researchers from Harvard and Dartmouth that have published similar kinds of conclusions. Now, so there was a study in 2010, the European Journal of Radiology, which clearly indicated, okay, it was published, the research was published in 2010, it clearly indicated if a woman is genetically predisposed, okay, so if they have they have it in genetically from their family, from their genetics, like BRCA 1 or 2, they are more susceptible to the breast cancer-inducing effects of this radiation. Five or more mammograms had between 119 to 300% increased risk of radiation-induced breast cancer. Okay. So this is something that logically I've really been, you know, knowing for decades. And but they finally come out with the research. So this is very, very important for women when considering whether to get mammograms.
I have a question, Dr.
When
Donna.
To start getting them or whether to get them at all. Yes.
Wasn't there a woman on the island who comes and does breast?
Yes, and I just saw that it is, if someone wants to look that up, you're talking about thermography.
Yes, that's
so
what I
So thermography is extremely safe. It has no side effects. And it's looking at the heat relationship of the tissues. And they can determine, actually very early on, if there's a lesion of concern. And I just happened to notice on the Heartbeat of Kauai that there is a woman who comes and goes to the different islands. There's also a practitioner on this island that does another kind of thermography. And as we're not supposed to talk about specific names, if anybody is interested in knowing that information, they can call me. And if they have other questions, they can call me. So my number is 828-6153. So as I said before, you know, you're having this diagnosis, or it's not a diagnosis, it's a screening. It was leading to more invasive treatments, especially if they're false positives. As I mentioned, there's so many false positives. And then it's diagnosing this whole class of breast cancer that's called DCIS, that is rarely problematic. It's rarely invasive. And I'm going to talk about recent research that came out in JAMA Oncology, so an incredibly prestigious journal. So it just came out on August 20th. It was published online. So there are... there's been this growing concern, as I mentioned, about, and this is what the article talks about. There's an article describing that's showing the study that was done, and also there's an editorial discussing it. So it's very interesting. And so this article is showing that about treatment options of DCIS, or ductal carcinoma in situ. So it has a very low rate of death for breast cancer, okay, only 3.3% over 20 years. So what they found, they studied 108,000 women with this diagnosis of DCIS. And what they found is that they should stop, this is a quote, we should stop telling women that DCIS is an emergency and that they should schedule definitive surgery within 2 weeks of diagnosis. So that's completely opposite. So normally it's today and how it has been that with this diagnosis, as I said, it's an aggressive treatment. So what they found is that for the lowest risk lesions, which most of them are, observation and preventative interventions alone should be implemented, and it should be tested first. Okay, that we wait and see. So this was what they were saying in the editorial in about these results. So this is in conventional medicine. They're saying, okay, unless it's invasive, high risk, which is not common, leave it alone. So
and we are out of time, Donna.
Are we already?
Yes,
out
we
of
are.
Time? Oh my gosh. Well, anyways, You get the gist about the mammograms. 80% of DCIS is low risk. So we really need to educate, and women need to educate ourselves. We need to educate our partners. Everyone needs to be educated about the risks and if there are any benefits at all of mammography. And there's so many other, there's so many other things I wanted to talk about in terms of preventative. And Cousin Rich, we don't have time, so we'll have to bring this up next time.
All right.
But anyways, everybody, go well.
Thank you, Donna.
Ahu-i-ho.
Good seeing you. Yeah.
Thank you so much,
see you
Cousin
in 2
Rich.
Weeks.
Yes.
And good health to everyone.
Yes.
Up next, One World
Aloha.
Radio with my friend Richard.